NPR's Karen Grigsby Bates lives in a part of Los Angeles that burned during those 92 riots. She says this past week's reporting on the 20th anniversary and also a powerful new documentary that airs this week are bringing all the memories back.
Several years ago, I interviewed Carl Fleming for the 40th anniversary of the Watts riots. He's a veteran journalist who'd covered the civil rights movement in the 60s for Newsweek. Fleming left the Deep South after his editors decided he needed to be rotated out of there. Riding towards Watts, he told me he was shocked to discover that while he'd left the Deep South for L.A., he hadn't escaped it.
These guys, these cops, rode around in these cars with the windows rolled up, looking nothing less than kind of an occupying army in a hostile and foreign country, and had a long track record of humiliating people, black people, pulling them over, doing what they call proning them on the ground.
In the early 90s, before Rodney King's beating became worldwide news, that's how much of the LAPD interacted with many of L.A.'s black residents, from gangsters to preachers. It's why you'd hear NWA's anthem blaring from all kinds of cars in black L.A., from busted-up hoopties to fully loaded Mercedes.
The police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad because I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority.
2 years before Los Angeles went up in flames, you couldn't go a day without hearing some part of that song if you lived at my end of town. VH1's documentary, Uprising, Hip Hop and the L.A. Riots, feels about right. Many of the major players were interviewed, including civil rights attorney Connie Rice, who'd been arguing for police reform for years. Here she tells VH1 producers what she was thinking when she saw the King tape.
The thing that was dawning on me as I watched it was, is this going to be enough to finally blow LAPD open?
Kids must go! Kids must go!
Will it finally be enough for them to see what everyday African Americans have been talking about for 20 years and have been ignored?
It wasn't for the jury in suburban Simi Valley.
We, the jury, in the above-entitled action, find the defendant, Stacey C. Kuhn, not guilty of the crime.
By late afternoon, reaction had become violent. By early evening, I could stand on my front porch and smell the smoke from fires just a few blocks away. The next morning, I had a flashback from my New England childhood, except the sidewalks and lawns and car roofs weren't covered with snow. They were covered with ash. And it wasn't just my neighborhood. The fires had spread beyond the confines of black L.A. to places that normally don't have much to do with my end of town. Arsenio Hall recalls the panic.
It was people in Beverly Hills that were nervous. You know, it was people in the big pink hotel on Sunset that were nervous because the riot wasn't confining itself just to the ghetto.
If you lived in or near the ghetto, you could forget about services. For the first few days, there was no mail. The shelves in what few grocery stores that existed were quickly denuded. The first new grocery to open in the neighborhood in 30 years was gated and shut tight as soon as the verdict became public. I took a trip across town with a friend to buy groceries. Everything was outwardly calm and intact. Inside, panicked people piled their carts high, stockpiling for an Armageddon that was miles away. On the way home, we marveled at how life could be so unchanged in one part of L.A. while everything had changed at our end. VH1's documentary Uprising captures all the energy and anger and destruction that occurred in the 6 days that the riots raged. And unlike a lot of reporting at the time, it does it from a grassroots point of view. It's worth watching and considering because, as students of history will tell you, uprisings are cyclical. Karen Grigsby Bates, NPR News.